This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week, we come to you from the Hawks Cay Island Resort in Duck Key, Florida. If you don't know where that is, we're right in the middle, literally in the middle of the Florida Keys. We're essentially in the center, but I'm at mile marker 61. For those people who know the Florida Keys, you know you count everything by the mile marker, and that's where we are. And very cool place, right over the overseas highway. It may take you some time to get down here because for those of you who know the Keys, you know it's basically a two-lane road all the way down, so take your time. And, of course, there are lots of great places to stop along the way. Whether you want like to or not, you're going to be stopping, but you'll have fun once you get here. And if you got kids, they've got a great kids program here, and it's not just a little room where they throw in crayons and an easel. They've got a great outdoor activities program. They've got a program for kids with dolphins that is not only interactive but humane, and they do a great job. So we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show, but we've got so many things to talk about today, especially in the news. We've got United Airlines cramming more seats in their 777s. We've got, it's now cheaper. This is the most bizarre thing. It's now cheaper to go from Omaha to Oman than it is to take the Washington to New York shuttle. I'm not exaggerating. What we're seeing is a slew of disruptor airlines that are coming into the market that are saying, you know what? Let's take a look at some cities that are really underutilized in terms of their airports. And that means that there are people who live there that are being disenfranchised, that they can't get out of town. It's to go from, let's say, New York to Sacramento is much more of an ordeal than New York to Doha. That shouldn't be the case, but it is. So what are you seeing? Airlines like WOW, a new airline from Iceland, that is offering fares from Los Angeles to Reykjavik in Iceland for $99. And if you want to go on to Europe from there, it's another like $190. I mean, you can't beat it. You're seeing airlines. How about, I mentioned New York to Doha. How about this? New York to Bangkok on Qatar Airways. Yes, you'll stop in Doha. How about $880 round trip? Emirates just had a deal from New York to Milan round trip for about $600. And then there's Norwegian. They're flying a lot of cities in the United States right now. And they're flying to Florida, they're flying to Los Angeles, and they're really undercutting with brand new Boeing 787 Dreamliners. How can you beat that? Now, the interesting city of all of the cities in the United States where things are happening more than ever, it's Boston. Everybody's choosing to make their gateway city Boston. And it's funny because in about less than a month, Qatar adds Boston as one of their cities, not to mention all these other airlines I just mentioned. So check it out. And you may not find it on the traditional websites. You know, Norwegian Air doesn't show up on Expedia or Travelocity or Orbit. They show up on their own. How about this? Los Angeles to Dublin in Ireland. How about Ethiopian Airlines flies that route? What? Well, actually, they fly L.A. with a stop in Dublin on the way to Addis Ababa, but they're allowed to take traffic locally between L.A. and Dublin. The fare is $371 round trip. It's absurd on brand new Boeing Dreamliner. So this is the time to be creative, to take your bucket list and throw it out and pick some places you might otherwise never even thought of going, because now you can actually get there from here. Now, how about this one? They just added the world's longest flight from Dubai to Auckland, 17 hours and 15 minutes, nonstop. And if you look at the globe, you'll realize why all the Gulf carriers are doing such great stuff, because they are perfectly situated on the map, given state-of-the-art aircraft, to be able to fly anywhere in the world nonstop from there. So if you want to go, let's say, from New York to Mumbai, you'd fly Emirates through Dubai or, you know, or Qatar Airways through Doha or Etihad through Abu Dhabi. And then the biggest sleeper of them all, and I have to tell you, this is the surprise of all surprises, and nobody ever gets it, okay? I'm not making this up. Nobody ever gets this. So I'll ask the question. Name the airline that flies to more destinations in the world than any other airline. Some people pick British Airways. No. It's Turkish Airways. Turkish Airlines, more destinations around the world than any other airline in the world. They've got new airplanes. They've got a. You should see their terminal in their current airport in Istanbul, which they're outgrowing, by the way. They're building another one. Their business class lounge is the largest in the world. It's got everything from masseuses to every kind of food. They've got gaming. They've got a movie theater in there. They've got pools. It's unbelievable. And you'd never believe in a million years that it would be Turkish. Well, guess what? It is. And now get out your maps, because if you want to fly anywhere, just like the examples I gave you of the Gulf Airlines, all you got to do is see where Turkish Airlines flies, because chances are they fly there. I had to go to Azerbaijan on a story. Guess what? I went through Istanbul on Turkish Airlines. Perfect flight. So all these things are possible right now at a fraction of the cost. I had to get to Norway, to Bergen, Norway. Now, if you go on the traditional websites, I mean any of them, up come the usual suspects. British Air, Air France, SAS, all having stops in their hometowns of either London or Paris or Copenhagen or Amsterdam on KLM. And the cheapest airfare coach was $1,800, and you had to stop. So on a lark, I went on the Norwegian website. Remember, I needed to go from New York to Bergen, Norway. I go on the Norwegian website, and they have a flight that goes nonstop from JFK to Bergen on a brand new Dreamliner. You know what the fare was in coach? $353. You know what it was in business class? $800. Guess what class I flew? Are you kidding? For $1,000 less than what the other airlines wanted to charge me for a coach flight with stops, I got to be in style on a brand new plane nonstop from New York to Bergen. You cannot beat that. And so it's time to be creative. It's time to turn the airline schedules on their head, to be somewhat counterintuitive and contrarian and do different routings, because that's where the fun happens. The fun happens when you can take these disruptor airlines, look at their route schedule, and realize how, for once, it actually benefits you.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
You know, when I think about resort dining in Florida, especially down here in the Keys, I don't have to go that far back to have bad memories of chicken fingers. The dining down here was either chicken fingers or mahi-mahi, followed by, would you like some more mahi-mahi? Hey, guess what's on the menu tonight? Mahi-mahi. Well, times have changed, and people have a much more sophisticated palate. They have bigger demands, and the sourcing is different, and it's not just seafood. Joining me now, the chef right here, William Ryan, who you came here from St. Lucia.
Yes, sir.
Completely different experience.
Yes.
What was the difference?
There's not a lot of differences. I think that's one of the reasons they brought me here. I worked in St. Lucia for over 3 years, and before that I was in the Virgin Islands. So the climate here, the water, things that grow here are very similar to what they are in the Caribbean.
But when you were in St. Lucia, you were really sustainable in that way. You were growing your own vegetables, right?
Absolutely, yeah. All the fish came right from the sea. The fishermen would call me from downstairs. All the locals would get down there with their giant nets and pull up their own little fish, and I'd go down there and cook them for our guests, yes.
Are you still getting locally sourced stuff here?
Yes, sir.
What are you getting here?
Right now we're getting yellowtail snapper. We are getting some mahi. I apologize for that.
My God, mahi is here.
The cobias right now is in season, and it's around. There's a lot of fish around here.
I know. And by the way, I'm one of those guys who likes to go fishing and eat the fish I catch. So you're not going to see me tarpon fishing. I hate those fish.
Oh, they're an awesome catch. You know, it's a catch of a lifetime if you ever caught a tarpon.
Did you hear what he just said? If you ever caught one. Yeah. They take your line, they wrap it around a pole, they break your line, and you're sitting there going, why did I even come out here today? They exist to just mess with you.
If you catch a tarpon, it will change your life.
Have you caught a tarpon?
I haven't yet, but I've heard the stories.
See? You see? My point exactly. If you change a tarpon, it'll change. If you catch a tarpon, it'll change your life. You can't eat them.
No. You can't even take them out of the water.
It's illegal.
Correct.
Right. Well, so they're protected.
Yes.
They can just be bad to you. All right. So what else are you growing here?
So we're all about trying to sustainability. We're all about farm to table. When I first started here, a lot of our produce was coming from California and around. I try and get all of our stuff locally within 150 miles. A lot of the berries, the microgreens, the salads, a lot of the fish is local, grouper cheeks. We built a relationship with a local lobster fisherman, so we're getting all our local lobster.
How's the market now? Because the lobster market was depressed for a long time. The prices has dropped substantially. Now what are they?
The lobster prices are pretty good. China actually buys a lot of lobsters here, but like I said, we do have a relationship with some local people that supply us with lobster.
Basically what you're saying is you know a guy.
Yeah, I know a guy.
You know a guy. You know a lobster guy.
Stone crabs too. I have my own stone crab traps out there, and I mean, it's just awesome to go out there and pull up a trap and it's full of stone crabs.
Really?
Yes.
And what people don't realize about stone crabs until you actually hear the story is they regenerate.
Yes. You take off one claw, you put them back, and in a couple of years, the claw's back again, yeah.
So talk about sustainable.
Absolutely.
If you do it the right way. How do you protect your traps?
Yeah, that's a good question. My traps are still there. They've been out there for almost a year. They're by a close island here, and yeah, nobody takes them, so. And you're allowed to have five.
You're allowed to have five. You have binoculars and a shotgun, don't you?
No.
What's the one thing that you, because you've been here how long now?
About a year and a half.
Okay, so when you came in, you had some ideas about what you wanted to put on the menu, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. What's the one thing you put on your menu that you thought, wow, this is going to be great, and it tanked? And what's the one thing that you said, no one's going to order this, and you can't keep it in stock because everybody wants it?
Well, a couple things. One thing is there's...
And don't say chicken fingers.
No.
Okay.
There's not a lot of scallops around here. So, and I love scallops. Me too. I've won competitions with scallops. I like the giant diver scallops that.
But you got to marinate them. You got to marinate them the right way, right?
You got to sear them nice and crispy on the outside, not cooked all the way through.
Because then they get too tough.
Yes.
So, all right, so scallops.
So I put those in the menu thinking they'd be a great seller. I learned that in the Keys, they're not going to buy salmon. They're not going to buy stuff that's not from here. So you have to buy. You have to put stuff on the menu like cobia. Like grouper cheeks is a big seller. That's an item that we put on that sells like hot bread. So yeah, grouper cheeks is a good seller. Scallops not so well.
Scallops still on the menu?
Yes, they are.
Because you like doing them?
Yes, I love scallops.
How do you do them?
We sear them with a wild mushroom ragu and then some crisp potato gnocchi.
That sounds great. And nobody orders it?
Well, no, I wouldn't say nobody. It's not one of our big sellers though. They like fresh local. Fish and produce. Yes.
Well, after enough blindfolded beer runs, I mean, somebody's going to order it. I mean, yeah, okay.
Very nice.
What's the toughest item you have to source?
The toughest item I have to... octopus. I'm getting octopus now, not locally. Octopus I'm getting, it comes from Spain. It's on our fine dining menu, Alma. That would probably be the...
Which is what?
Alma's Latin cuisine.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go.
I always like to ask the locals every time I go somewhere. And my next guest, I think I can call him a local, even though he's from Toledo.
That's okay.
How long have you been down here?
13 years.
Okay, you're a local.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Jason Kohler, who's the editor and publisher of the Keys Weekly. People don't really understand the Keys, do they?
No, and I don't think I even understand the Keys after being here 13 years.
I mean,
people, they look at the map, they sort of think of it as this like little string bean, a little strand, and yet it goes for a long time.
One way in, one way out, 126 miles, yep.
Right, one way in, one way out, and you're not kidding. You know when you're coming down and you see a sign on the street that says hurricane evacuation route, you know that's the one way out.
Exactly, and how would you like to be at the very end of this road when a hurricane's coming? I mean, you know
well,
what it's
either,
like.
You know what, that's either very, very good or very, very bad because it all depends on the strength of the storm. If it's not a strong storm, you're styling.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, think about the people that were here in 1992 during Hurricane Andrew. You know, a lot of people evacuated to the mainland.
And that's what got hit.
Yeah, the smart people went to Key West and partied on Duval Street.
When in doubt, drink.
Yeah, exactly.
Here we go again. It's all about the drinking. But what brought you down here?
Actually, my wife was recruited to run a restaurant down here. And, you know, like you, Peter, I'm a writer. And I was going to move down here and write the great American novel, but it didn't exactly work out as planned.
But you're writing.
Yeah, I'm writing.
And you're having fun.
Writing, having fun.
What's the one thing that people do not understand about the Keys?
Probably that you are allowed to drink wherever you want.
Let me write that down.
They really? Drink at church here.
They don't.
No, well, sometimes. It's the Catholic churches, but yeah.
Oh, boy. Confessional can be a bass. Oh boy, that's bad.
Well, no, okay, all right. The real thing that people don't understand about the Keys, people generally care about each other here. I mean, you're well traveled, obviously, Peter. You're the foremost authority in the world on travel. But coming to the Keys, it's a safe place to come. You're not going to get ripped off. People don't treat you like a number. People actually care that you know they take good care of you. So, and I think that goes a long way.
Sure, it's a community.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it's not one community. It's lots of communities.
Yep, exactly.
How many?
And each has their own little distinct characteristics and cliques
like
and systems.
Example, we're here in Duck Key, but yep. You live in Marathon.
Correct.
Right? That's bigger.
Yeah, that's bigger. That's a whopping 8,000 people in Marathon, correct?
So everybody does know everybody.
Yeah, but that's quite a bit different from Key West and quite a bit different from the Upper Keys, too. So
you know, when I look at the Keys, I'm not looking necessarily at beaches. I'm looking at sandbars.
Right. Yeah. There aren't a lot of beaches here. I mean, this is coral. I mean, these keys are all just rock. You know, the grass does not grow down here. You know, I had a beautiful grass yard when I bought my house, but now it's just a sandy mess.
And the thing is, if you don't know what you're doing, you will run aground.
Correct. Oh,
very,
yeah.
Very
no question
quick,
about
very
it.
Very quickly.
Yep. Happens all the time.
Right?
Yep. And the one rule you have to remember, if it's brown, you run aground.
Well, I could use that for a number of places. But, I mean, everybody's got a boat, or they know somebody with a boat.
Exactly.
Right? And they like to fish.
Yes.
Are you a fisherman?
I'm not so much a fisherman, but I do go out on my boat quite a bit. Diving, snorkeling.
Yeah,
take the kids out swimming, that kind of thing.
All right, but there are places that you like to hang out.
Oh, yeah.
That are not necessarily in the brochure.
No.
All right, so let's start. I'll tell you where I like to go, okay? Mm-hmm. And you're going to laugh at me. All
right? No, I'm not going to laugh.
I go to breakfast, only breakfast, at the Hungry Tarpon.
All right. Yeah, that's great.
Right?
Yeah.
Then I go out back and watch people do stupid things. They give you a pail full of bait, right?
Yeah.
And you take this bucket, and you go out to the end of the dock, and you go la, 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 and you stand there, and you get down on your knees, and you take this little fish out of your hand, and before you even have a chance to put it out of the water, this humongous tarpon comes flying out of the water and tries to take your arm off. This is called recreation over there.
Yep.
Right?
That's
How many
crazy.
People have bloody arms?
Come on. My friends at the Tourist Development Council would not be happy if I repeated those answers.
But we know the answers. But people keep doing it all the time.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's an experience. You know, anywhere you go, you want to have an experience and, you know, take on something unique and take back some memories.
But the breakfast there is pretty cool.
It's dynamite.
It's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. And come hungry because those are big portions.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of awesome restaurants up and down the Keys. I mean, that's one thing that we're blessed with. You know,
right.
In Marathon, we have 6 chain restaurants. That's it.
Wow. That's it.
That's it.
Wow.
IHOP, McDonald's, Burger King, Subway, you know, I mean, it's few.
What's scaring me is that you're naming them all.
Well, I can name 50 other great ones.
Well, you know what? You will, because when we come back, I want to know where you guys hang out.
Hello? This is your captain speaking. There is absolutely no cause for alarm.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure and whatever comes our way.
We've been speaking with Jason Kohler, the editor and publisher of the Keys Weekly. Now, I've actually been to this restaurant, which is the Castaway.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty cool place.
That place is awesome.
But what's cool about that is the owner.
Yep.
Tell me about him.
His name is John Mirabella. Very interesting local character. Experienced diver. He's a master diver. He's actually learned to dive in the Navy. And
there's a reason why they have a lot of lionfish on the menu.
Yeah, it's an invasive species due to the Keys. And he goes out and collects them all himself.
He spears them.
Spears them, yep. He's got all these different spots marked. He'll go out there.
So there's lionfish sushi, lionfish sashimi, lionfish gumbo.
Any way you want it. Wreck diver style if you want it with capers and lemon.
What's wreck diver style?
It's sauteed in a pan. It's got diced tomatoes on it, capers, lemon, and white wine. It's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, that's the best way to get it.
Okay, so that's the Castaway.
Yeah.
Where else do you hang out?
Hang out at Castaway, Sparky's.
Okay, Sparky's. That sounds like you're going to get in trouble.
Sparky's Landing.
You're going to
get
in trouble.
Fish and cocktails.
A lot more cocktails than fish.
Yeah, but they have an awesome fish Reuben there. It's dynamite.
Really?
Yeah, and great fish tacos, too. But if you're going to go to Sparky's and get the fish tacos, go with Blackened. That's the best way to get the fish tacos there. It's fresh mahi-mahi. It's dynamite. They got pickled cabbage on top of it and a key lime sauce. Mm.
So all you do is eat.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm worried about you.
Can't you tell?
Yeah, you're a big guy.
Well,
yeah.
I'm off vegetables, so.
Oh, okay. So now, bottom line is, what keeps you here?
There's a bunch of different reasons, but just the fact that my kids are growing up in a safe place. You know, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, or Toledo, you know, Northwest Ohio. And this is just a much better place to raise kids, you know. The water's blue, doesn't get hard in the wintertime. It's awesome.
Doesn't get hard in the wintertime. No, it's not going to do that.
No.
Plus, now you're essentially the gateway to Cuba.
Yeah. Yeah. We are going to be the gateway to Cuba. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Are they putting the ferry in?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see whether that ferry goes in Key West or whether it's going to go in Marathon.
Because there was even a guy trying to do one out of Tampa.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But Marathon is actually closer to Havana than Key West.
Oh, because you kind of jut out there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've flown over there a couple times.
But they used to have a ferry from Key West to Cuba.
Yeah, exactly. And I think my buddy, his dad drove the last ferry across, never went back.
Wow.
Got off that ferry boat and just stayed.
It'll be interesting to see. You know, everybody thinks about it's going to happen very fast, but they forget there are so many remaining legal claims for appropriated property. You know, you haven't seen Hilton or Sheraton or Hyatt go down to Cuba and build anything yet because they still have claims against the Cuban government for all the stuff they took from them back in the early 60s.
Yeah, and the families, too, that had stuff taken from. I mean, right. You go to Miami, you don't want to bring that up.
And you know what? Well, you have to bring it up. And the thing is, there's no clear way to adjudicate it now because there's title issues and everything else. So I think what's going to happen is these cases are going to get settled, but not the way you think. They'll get settled with the Cuban government saying, okay, that property is off the table because we can't ascertain title and it's too messy, but we're going to give you this plot of land, you know, in exchange, and now you can do that. And that's what you're going to see. You're going to see people start to build on land they never owned, but they're going to be given it as a part of the settlement.
Well, I'd rather see them settle it that way than the way it was settled, you know, 60 years ago with bullets.
Exactly. And that may apply to the ferry terminal. Not here, but there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So any talk about doing it here?
Well, I mean, you know, both municipalities are definitely looking into it. You know, I mean, Marathon's got one of the biggest, most well-protected harbors on the eastern coast in Boot Key. Key West got a ferry terminal. You know, they have the ferry that goes back and forth from Fort Myers. So I think Marathon is probably the most logical place to put it.
And by the way, speaking of Marathon, this is the weekend of your what? Seafood Festival.
40th annual.
Original. But who's counting?
Yeah. Just the fishermen.
And what's going to happen there?
There's going to be about 20,000 people that pile into our Marathon Community Park, and they're going to enjoy lobster, fried fish, oysters, conch salad, shrimp, and about 160 kegs of beer.
See, you buried the lead there. but here's my question. I also see on the menu fried dolphin.
Yeah.
How do you do? Come on, flipper?
Not flipper, the tuna kind. You know, the beautiful iridescent blue and yellow that you catch out
okay.
in blue water.
Okay, don't
not
scare
the
me.
Porpoise.
Okay.
No, not the squeaky kind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
Mahi mahi.
Oh, no, don't say mahi mahi. Oh, no, please, no. And that's all weekend.
All weekend long, yeah. It starts Saturday morning at 11 a.m., and then it wraps up Sunday at 5 p.m.
Cool deal.
The locals will probably be out there having a couple Pepsis tomorrow night.
Yeah, we know who you are. Well, I'm going to give you two words. Designated driver.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, our cabs are cheap in town. $5 anywhere in town you want to go.
Is that true?
Yeah, $5.
It's a flat rate?
Yeah.
Oh, it pays not to drive.
It pays not to drive. I mean, it'd be stupid to drive.
Wow. I love that. I love that. All right.
Yeah.
Jason Kohler. I'm worried about you.
Editor and I'll publisher, be okay, Pete.
I think you're going. Editor and publisher of the Keys Weekly from Toledo, Ohio, but he's not going back.
No way. No I'm not way. LeBron James.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care.
I am a passenger. Now ride, ride. I ride through the city backsides. I see the stars come out of the sky. Yeah, the bright and hollow sky. You know, it looks so good.
Always like to ask the locals what's going on, and my next guest is about as local as you can get. If you go back as far as, what, 1989?
2001 for the Keys. 89 is in South Florida.
South Florida. So yeah. Then you kind of migrated further south.
Yes, yes.
And his name is Brad Bertelli, a great historian here in the Florida Keys. And most people don't really know the history down here, do they?
It is a fascinating history. People come down to the Florida Keys thinking it's a great place to come fishing, to come drinking and have a good time.
Well, that part I got. Yeah.
That part, yeah, it's very clearly advertised. But what's not so much advertised is the incredible amount of history that's down here.
For example,
we have Indian Key, probably the best kept secret in the whole Florida Keys. Everyone talks about Key West. Once upon a time, Indian Key, which is a state park now, was once the second largest community outside of Key West and actually competed with wrecking industry and as a community with Key West. This is the 1830s.
Wow. And what's there now?
Now it's a state park. It's what I like to call the Florida Keys only ghost town. There are remnants of the old wrecking village that was out there. It's an 11-acre island. Once upon a time,
nobody's living there?
No. It's a state park. So, yeah, so it's 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, basically.
And then the ghosts come out.
And, you can't go out there at night.
But then how do you know it's haunted?
Well, because there was an Indian attack, and there are graves, and there's been people massacred out there.
Wow.
It's an amazing story.
All right, so we got the Halloween part covered. Right.
All right.
All right. We got that part covered. But in terms of the history here, in terms of the trading, the ships, the boats that used to come in here.
Right.
Right. That was a big port.
Well, that was one. What made Indian Key successful and why it competed with Key West was that the waters here are very shallow. And Indian Key represented one of the natural deep water ports. So ships could actually come all the way to the island. What makes it even more important and why it was such an important part of the early history is that it had the... On Lower Matacumbe Key, and this goes back to the 1500s, the 1600s, 1700s, there was the most reliable and best freshwater source in the whole island chain. Because freshwater for a sailor back in those days...
It was hard to come from.
Hard to come by and very important.
How many keys are there?
Hundreds and hundreds, 800, 900. It's hard to figure out the exact number because at one point there's a bunch of mangroves become an island. Yeah.
Right. Right, and most of them, of course, not inhabited.
Most of them not inhabited. No. A lot of them, only a relative, a small fraction have been linked by the overseas highway.
Well, we're talking about the highway that's basically the two-lane road here.
It's, yes, hopefully it will stay that way.
And why do you say that?
It's the islands...
Because there's a pro and a con to that.
Yeah.
I mean, you get one car breakdown and nobody's moving.
One car breaking down, we're stuck for hours. And these are small islands. It can only hold so many people. And it's a great place to come. But
the best way to limit population growth is just to have a bad car. Just have it break down and nobody can get here.
Or just have someone break down every week at the top of the stretch so they can't make it down here.
Yeah, but in all seriousness, I understand why you don't want to expand that road because that would just make it even more congested.
And it's dangerous. I mean, people are coming down here. They should be relaxing when they come to the Florida Keys and not being in a hurry. The Florida Keys are not about being in a hurry. It's not about being in
It's not about speed.
Miami and New York and Los Angeles. It's about taking a breath, relaxing, and enjoying the beautiful nature, the incredible water, the wildlife, the fishing.
So you went down to Miami, and then 12 years later, you came down here.
I came to South Florida in 89 to chase my... I'm a writer by trade. And I wanted to come write the great American, the great Florida novel. And I came in 89. I went to Sanibel and Captiva on the west coast of Florida, and things didn't go as quickly as I wanted to, so I ended up going to the University of Miami and get my MFA in creative writing with the intent of going back down, back to Sanibel. But, you know, weekends, spring breaks.
You were partying.
I started coming down to the Florida Keys. Yeah. And as soon as I graduated, I came right back down. And I've never lived more than a mile from where I first landed.
But you're writing.
I am fortunate that I'm able to make my living doing what I love the best. And
so you wrote a book on you wrote a book called Snorkeling the Florida Keys.
I've done four books. The first book was called Snorkeling Florida, which was a general guide to Florida. And while I was writing that book, what really struck me was that every dive captain had a different story about how this reef got its name, how that reef got its name. So I started doing my own research.
There you go. Keep that going. This is Flight 372 on SWA. The flight attendants on board serving you today. Teresa in the middle, David in the back. My name is David, and I'm here to tell you that shortly after takeoff, first things first, there's soft drinks and coffee to quench your thirst. But if you want another kind of drink, then just holler. Alcoholic beverages will be $4. If a Monster energy drink is your plan, that'll be $3, and you get the whole can. We won't take your cash. You got to pay with plastic.
When we last broke off, Brad, you were talking about the Keys and also all the stuff that's down there.
The reef, you can't come to the Florida Keys and not experience the third largest tropical coral reef system in the world.
And you don't have to be a diver like you. You can be a snorkeler.
This is a fantastic place to snorkel. Both two of my books are about snorkeling, and there's tons to look at in 20, 30 feet of water. You don't have to put on all the gear and get down there and investigate.
What was the most surprising thing you saw that you've ever seen down there?
The coolest thing I ever saw was actually off of Bahia Honda in like 2 feet of water. I was snorkeling around.
Well, in 2 feet of water, you can hurt yourself.
You could hurt yourself. But there was a queen conch, you know, the symbol of the Florida Keys. And there was a horse conch, which is the state's shell of Florida. And the horse conch was about the size of a football. The queen conch was about the size of a softball. And as I approached it, a horse conch, his mouth is orange. And it had totally engulfed the queen conch shell. So all you could, as it was feeding, it had extended his foot out around the conch shell, and all I could see from the queen conch were these little spikes sticking up, and it was one of the most phenomenal things I've ever seen. It was just so cool.
And today they're married and they have six kids.
Oh well, you know, in that black widow sense, or the praying mantis sense.
But you got to watch that, you know, Mr. Darwin, as they would say. You saw the origin of the
survival, the survival of the fittest out there. It's a conch eat conch world.
You've used that line before.
I have once or twice.
I figured you might. What's the biggest surprise for people who come down here for the first time? I mean, it's not that they don't know the history, but when they find something out, right? You know they don't know the history. They're coming down to party.
Absolutely.
Right? So when do they discover the history? How do you actually show them that?
I am a historian of all trades at this point. I am very fortunate that I'm able to do what I love and make a living doing it. I'm also the curator at the Keys History and Discovery Center. It's a museum located up in Isle of Maratha at mile marker 82.
So what's in the collection?
We're new. We're growing. We have exhibits on the first people of the Florida Keys. We have on the 1733 treasure fleet, on Indian Key, on the fishing legends. Here's something that people would not understand about the Florida Keys. Is that I know when Ponce de Leon came in 1513, he called...
Searching for the Fountain of Youth.
Fountain of Youth, absolutely. He named these islands Los Martyrs, the Martyrs, because he thought the islands looked tortured. But that wasn't the original name for the islands. That was the original European name. The indigenous people who've been here for, you know, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 years, they referred to this island chain as the Matacumbe Islands.
Because?
Because, these small groups of Indians... The three major tribes that were in the area with the Calusa, the Tequesta, and the Matacumbe. The Calusa were the governing force, the largest force most of the time. And normally, the Matacumbe were a tribe, and normally the tribe took the name, and the cake or the chief of the group would take on the name of the group and of the place. So they were the Matacumbe people. They lived on the Matacumbe Islands.
Okay. So then... What have you got there? You got all that exhibits of the original folks who lived here.
We have some great artifacts, some great stories, some great firsthand accounts written by there was a shipwreck survivor in the 1550s, 1560s.
You know, it's interesting. A shipwreck survivor is your perfect guy to write a book because he's got nothing else to do.
Well, he spent 17 years living with the Clouse Indians.
That's what I said. Yeah. He's a shipwreck survivor. What are you going to do? Write a book? See, that's what you got to do. You got to get shipwrecked with a pen and a piece of paper. You're in.
Or, you know, a little tablet, you know.
Latter-day shipwreck.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but it's important to hear what the people, these first-hand accounts who are not hearing it secondhand, because sailors get out there on that boat and they have some grog and they tell stories, and that kernel of truth becomes a bowl of popcorn, you know. The stories grow and become grander and bigger.
But the thing that I think is fascinating, most Americans don't realize, because they've been propagandized in the movies, to realize what a significant Indian population there was in Florida. I mean, they think it was just the wild, wild west.
Absolutely, yeah. And some of the best evidence, I mean, just to give you an idea of the size of, there's about 150 prehistoric sites in the Florida Keys. A lot of them have been covered up due to, you know, construction and progress. But there's one significant Indian mound, which was kind of a refuse pile for where Indians put their broken tools, their broken pottery shards, all their conch shells and fish and things. There's an Indian mound in the Upper Keys the size of a football field, which is a pretty significant.
Are they still excavating?
There is work going on right now by Dr. Tracy Ardrin from the University of Miami, who is also helping us with my work at the Discovery Center. And there's also Bob Carr, who's doing some work down here in the Florida Keys. He is most famously working on the Miami Circle up in a large Tecosta site.
So the bottom line is, you're finding stuff new every day.
The more I learn about the Florida Keys, the history here, the less I know. It's amazing how much there is, and it's like, it amazes me, because I think I'm pretty. My full time job is studying this stuff, and I've been blessed for the last couple of years to just be able to do that.
So you know what? You're an SNS guy. You know what that stands for?
I'm about to find out.
Study and snorkel.
Get through 171, contact departure.
Contact departure, Idle Base, go 423, adios.
AMAC 403, contact departure, adios.
Over departure, gentlemen, 171, awesome job.
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial. For those of you who know, I live on a boat. So for me, if I can't be on the water, I take hostages. Okay, that's my full disclosure here. So my next guest, of course, I can't wait to talk to him because he's on the water every day. He runs a saltwater experience here at Hawks Cay, and his name is Rich Tudor. Captain, hello.
Hey, how are you?
All right. I got you off the boat long enough to come in and talk to me, right?
Yeah, we were out fishing this morning and had to rush in. I set my alarm, and we were actually fighting a giant sea monster right before I had my alarm went off, so we had to make it quick.
Okay, hold on. And what was the sea monster you were fighting?
Well, it was yet to be determined, but I'm pretty sure I know what it was. I think
it was a tarpon?
No.
What was it?
No, well, it was you got to keep guessing here. It was big, really big, really big.
How big?
Like 14 feet big.
Shark.
Kind of. Sawfish.
A sawfish?
A giant sawfish. Like prehistoric big. It was fishing back in the Everglades, there's a few spots where there are these big critters. We were catching some sharks. We were catching some 100-pound lemon sharks.
Okay, and, now when you catch a shark, it goes back.
Yep, we let them all go.
You let them all go. It's catch and release all
yep.
the way. Now, you have to understand, I'm an East Coast guy. I spent my fishing years on Long Island. If I'm going to fish for the fish, it's dinner. I'm so happy I caught it, I got to eat it. Right? Now, that doesn't mean I'm being insensitive, but obviously I'm not fishing for species that are endangered.
Right.
Right? A sawfish, I'm assuming, is...
They are. They're an endangered species. We were not targeting them. It was a real surprise. Only the second time I've ever hooked one. We were catching the sharks, and we actually caught a big Goliath grouper, about a 400-pound Goliath grouper, and then at the end, about an hour before we were supposed to head back, we hooked into this giant fish.
Wait, I want to go back to the grouper. That one you keep, right?
We actually let those go. Goliath grouper is another catch and release.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're doing this because I wouldn't know.
That's the thing about the Keys here. We have so many different species. Literally, when we leave from Hawks Bay here, I can go east, south, north, west. Every direction we go, we have so many different species. And for the eating fish, we typically go out to the ocean there, the reefs and the offshore.
And we'll you're catch, catching what?
We'll catch black grouper, red grouper. Those are the eating grouper that we eat mostly. Yellowtail snapper, delicious. Right. Mahi-mahi, tuna. There's so many good eating fish. And then we
those all, you keep?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Okay, I'm feeling better already.
Yep. Catch them. That's a big popular thing here is what we call our hook and cook. You know, the guests will come in here and go out fishing with the captain and bring them back to the restaurant and cook them up.
Okay, so I got to ask the obvious question. When a guest goes out fishing, what's the biggest one a guest ever caught?
Well.
And don't lie to me.
Today was pretty close, that sawfish.
No, but I'm talking
enormous.
About hook and cook.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, swordfish would probably be the biggest things that we actually ever bring home. And we go out, leave here, run about 30 miles offshore.
You go to the canyons?
Yes. There's some underwater canyons out there. And that's a great fishery. We actually have a daytime fishery nowadays where we go out and we drop bait down 2,000 feet deep. And
they're that deep?
And catch them in the day. And it's pretty spectacular.
And how long does it take you to bring them up?
Well, it depends on how big the fish is.
30 to 40 minutes?
Yeah.
At least.
And then some.
And then some.
Yeah.
Am I strapped into the chair?
Well, we do most of our fishing, kind of light as we can, standing up.
Really?
The fishing down here.
What pound test?
Well, it depends. So in that situation, swordfish usually about 80 pound braided line.
That is a big fishing line.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And you're doing that standing up?
Yeah.
Anybody ever get pulled off the boat?
It's happened.
I knew it.
Not very often. We're very, very careful. Anytime you're catching these big fish, it is an adventure. It's not scripted. You don't know what's going to happen. Today was a great example. We literally had a guy and his three kids, a 12-year-old, two 15-year-olds, and they had a blast. And never fished before, and they caught these incredible fish.
None that they kept.
No, we did keep a couple of trout. We caught saltwater.
So they're eating
trout.
That tonight.
Yep.
There we go.
Yep. And that'll be good. And that's one of the things that we.
And you know what
here.
They say about it? Tastes just like sawfish. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I had to say it.
That's good.
You like that one, didn't you?
Yeah, that's good.
You
that
can use
good.
That. I'll
that
give it
good.
To you.
All right.
Rich Tudor, the guy who runs the Hawks K Seafaring Experience, the fishing experience, right? It's the saltwater.
Yep.
And keep me away from the tarpon, okay? I hate tarpon. I absolutely despise them.
Really?
Yes. You know why? They always grab my line and wrap it around a pole. It's done, right? And it's done. I mean, and plus you can't eat them. Plus they, you can't keep them. You can't do anything with them except watch them piss off somebody else.
That's cool. Well, we love it, man. We've got so many different things to fish for down here. If you got enough time, I'll take you out.
Where are the wagons?
The wagon is too slow. Can't you ride?
It's not that he can't ride. How is it you put it home?
They're dangerous at both ends and crafty in the middle. Why would I want anything with a mind of its own bobbing about between my legs?
My next guest, she's the director of experience, whatever that means, at Hawks K, Megan Libby. How are you, Megan?
Great. How are you?
Okay, so what does that mean?
Well, it basically means I direct all the fun. I get the best job.
You direct the fun?
I direct the fun.
You create the fun?
I create the fun. I make fun.
Now, the last time I was here, we actually did our radio show from here about 5 or 6 years ago, got in the water with the dolphins. It was great. I mean, it's a great experience.
That's fantastic.
And there's no age requirement?
For the dolphins, there's different types of programs.
Right.
So young
kids can get out there.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. So give me an idea of a typical day here for you.
Oh my goodness. Well, there's not really a typical day, I'd probably say, but I came on board to kind of enhance the whole experience here. We just finished with a multi-million-dollar renovation of the whole Coral K property, which is our activities and adventure center. We have a brand new pirate ship and a teen lounge. And I actually, I came on to.
Let's start with the pirate ship.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Right?
Well, come on. I mean, do the kids walk the plank?
Oh, you can walk the plank. Well, there's like little squirt guns and water slides, and we use it with Camp Hawk, our new educational environmental ed program.
Okay, so let me ask you about that. Everybody says they've got an environmental program.
Yeah.
But then this gets down to the comprehensive nature of it, right? Mm-hmm. Do they show them a photograph of a turtle taken 40 years ago, or do they actually get hands-on experience?
Well, the great thing about being here on Duck Key is that the kids can be out in nature, touching, feeling, seeing what actually exists.
Okay, so imagine me as a slightly larger-than-life kid.
Okay.
What would I do today?
Well, you would go on Dolphin Adventure Day. We actually partner with Dolphin Connection, and the kids actually go and learn about the dolphins from the dolphin trainers, get on the dock and see the dolphins, and get to know all about the different types of sea turtles that we have here, and it's fantastic.
Now, is it interactive?
Mm-hmm, very interactive. We have different programs for each day. So we'll have like a creepy crawly critters day where they go out.
I had that at a Holiday Inn once, but that was different. I'm sorry.
These are all outside creepy crawlies, like iguanas, and they get to go on nature walks.
But no Komodo fantastic. Dragons.
Oh, no. No. We're dragon free.
I thought so, yeah. Alligators?
Alligators.
Yes?
Alligators are pretty rare.
Okay.
Around on property here. I'm not going to lie to you, but we get to see all sorts of other fun things. We have birds of a feather. We go and see all the different types of birds that we have on property.
Do the parents get involved in this?
They can become involved. We have lots of programs for families, a lot of nature-based programs, and a lot of like fun programs for all ages.
Okay. Now, here comes an item that I hear complaints about all the time.
Sure.
The tweens. They're always ignored. Right?
Oh.
You know, the kids between, let's say, 12 and 16, mm-hmm. they don't know what to do.
Well, that's a really tough age, but we've actually put a lot of emphasis on our tween age between 13 to 17. Actually, we have a whole teen program and a teen lounge, which was part of this renovation project.
And what do they get to do?
Well, they have special programs just for teens. So we'll have special teen night outs. We have kickball tournaments, glow parties, all sorts of great stuff.
Glow parties.
Oh, yes, with glow sticks.
Oh, my God, that's for the adults. What are you talking about? Glow party.
Come on, it's fun.
What's the one thing you tried in a program setting that you thought was going to work that didn't?
Oh, my. Oh, that didn't. That's a really tough one.
Pet the alligator program, where that didn't work out too well?
Yeah, maybe, you know, pet the iguana program probably didn't work out so well.
Catch the iguana program.
Catch the iguana.
No, but seriously, is there one that you tried that didn't work, or one you think, who's going to want this? And, like, people loved it.
Oh, you know, actually, I do have one of those. I did not think it would be, because it's something personally that I just thought would be fun, and so I just threw it out there, and I didn't think it would be as popular as it was. It's actually the Beer Olympics that we tried for adults, because we have a whole new adult-themed programs.
The Adult Beer Olympics.
Oh, yes, sir. Absolutely.
And how do you come in first in that?
Well, I'm not really quite sure, to be honest. Well, it's all for fun. Well, there's different rounds and different like trivias and flip cup and blindfolded beverage chasing, and it's a whole
blindfolded beverage chasing.
That's right.
Could you explain that?
Well, it's in the name, really. It's you get blindfolded and you have a team member. It's a partner activity, so teamwork. And they
well, drinking usually requires teamwork.
Well, you know.
Go ahead. So you're blindfolded with a partner and...
With a partner. So one partner's not. One person is blindfolded and they're on the ground, like crawling, and the beverage is placed somewhere on the lawn and the person behind has to direct them to the beverage.
And then when they get there, of course, they have to drink it.
Well, if they are so lucky.
Ah. Is there cheating involved? Yes.
Well, you know, we have to have referees.
Referees?
Absolutely.
Oh my! And their prizes.
Oh, there are definitely prizes.
See, my feeling is after about 40 minutes of this, they're going to be chasing iguanas anyway.
No, that's why we have the referees.
Megan Libby, the director of experience at Hawks Game.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.